to look at him. After a moment, I noticed that the mirror was reflecting more than the reflection of our faces and the round shape. Its surface had become dark. Spots of an intense violet light appeared. They grew large. There were also spots of jet blackness. Then it turned into something like a flat picture of a cloudy sky at night, in the moonlight. Suddenly, the whole surface came into focus as if it were a moving picture. The new sight was a three-dimensional, breathtaking view of the depths. I knew that it was absolutely impossible for me to fight off the tremendous attraction of that sight. It began to pull me in. Don Juan whispered forcefully that I should roll my eyes for dear life. The movement brought immediate relief. I could again distinguish our reflections and that of the ally. Then the ally disappeared and reappeared again on the other end of the mirror. Don Juan commanded me to grip the mirror with all my might. He warned me to be calm and not make any sudden movements. "What's going to happen?" I whispered. "The ally will try to come out," he replied. As soon as he had said that, I felt a powerful tug. Something jerked my arms. The tug was from underneath the mirror. It was like a suction force that created a uniform pressure all around the frame. "Hold the mirror tightly, but don't break it," Don Juan ordered. "Fight the suction. Don't let the ally sink the mirror too deep." The force pulling down on us was enormous. I felt that my fingers were going to break or be crushed against the rocks on the bottom. Don Juan and I both lost our balance at one point and had to step down from the flat rocks into the stream. The water was quite shallow, but the thrashing of the ally's force around the frame of the mirror was as frightening as if we had been in a large river. The water around our feet was being swirled around madly, but the images in the mirror were undisturbed. "Watch out!" Don Juan yelled. "Here it comes!" The tugging changed into a thrust from underneath. Something was grabbing the edge of the mirror, not the outer edge of the frame where we were holding it, but from the inside of the glass. It was as if the glass surface were indeed an open window, and something or somebody were just climbing through it. Don Juan and I fought desperately, either to push the mirror down when it was being thrust up, or pull it up when it was being tugged downward. In a stooped-over position, we slowly moved downstream from the original spot. The water was deeper, and the bottom was covered with slippery rocks. "Let's lift the mirror out of the water and shake him loose," Don Juan said in a harsh voice. The loud thrashing continued unremittingly. It was as if we had caught an enormous fish with our bare hands, and it was swimming around wildly. It occurred to me that the mirror was, in essence, a hatch. A strange shape was actually trying to climb up through it. It was leaning on the edge of the hatch with a mighty weight and was big enough to displace the reflection of Don Juan's face and mine. I couldn't see us anymore. I could only distinguish a mass trying to push itself up. The mirror was not resting on the bottom anymore. My fingers were not compressed against the rocks. The mirror was in mid-depth, held by the opposing forces of the allies' tugs and ours. Don Juan said he was going to extend his hands underneath the mirror and that I should very quickly grab them in order to have a better leverage to lift the mirror with our forearms. When he let go, it tilted to his side. I quickly reached for his hands, but there was nothing underneath. I vacillated a second too long, and the mirror flew out of my hands. "Grab it! Grab it!" Don Juan yelled. I caught the mirror just as it was going to land on the rocks. I lifted it out of the water, but not quickly enough. The water seemed to be like glue. As I pulled the mirror out, I also pulled a portion of a heavy, rubbery substance that simply pulled the mirror out of my hands and back into the water. Don Juan, displaying extraordinary nimbleness, caught the mirror and lifted it up edgewise without any difficulty. Never in my life had I had such an attack of melancholy. It was a sadness that had no precise foundation. I associated it with the memory of the depths I had seen in the mirror. It was a mixture of pure longing for those depths, plus an absolute fear of their chilling solitude. Don Juan remarked that in the life of warriors it was extremely natural to be sad for no overt reason. Seers say that the luminous egg, as a field of energy, senses its final destination whenever the boundaries of the known are broken. A mere glimpse of the eternity outside the cocoon is enough to disrupt the coziness of our inventory. The resulting melancholy is sometimes so intense that it can bring about death. He said that the best way to get rid of melancholy is to make fun of it. He commented in a mocking tone that my first attention was doing everything to restore the order that had been disrupted by my contact with the ally. Since there was no way of restoring it by rational means, my first attention was doing it by focusing all its power on sadness. I told him that the fact remained the melancholy was real. Indulging in it, moping around, being gloomy were not part of the feeling of aloneness that I had felt upon remembering those depths. "Something is finally getting through to you," he said. "You're right. There is nothing more lonely than eternity, and nothing is more cozy for us than to be a human being. This indeed is another contradiction. How can man keep the bonds of his humanness and still venture gladly and purposefully into the absolute loneliness of eternity? Whenever you resolve this riddle, you'll be ready for the definitive journey." I knew then, with total certainty, the reason for my sadness. It was a recurrent feeling with me, one that I would always forget until I again realized the same thing: the puniness of humanity against the immensity of that thing in itself which I had seen reflected in the mirror. "Human beings are truly nothing, Don Juan," I said.
"I know exactly what you're thinking," he said. "Sure, we're nothing. But that's exactly what makes it the ultimate challenge, that we nothings could actually face the loneliness of eternity."
He abruptly changed the subject, leaving me with my mouth open, my next question unsaid. He began to discuss our bout with the ally. He said that, first of all, the struggle with the ally had been no joke. It had not really been.